Welcome to the 12th Man Rising Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Here's your hosts, Lee Vowell and Todd Vandenberg.
And I think, yeah, here we are. So that recording was just like pause. I don't know if we're recording.
Are we recording?
I see, there you're staticky again.
Are we recording?
Who That's knows? A little bit better. I learned something this week. You know, Pop-Tarts?
Yes.
You can put those in the toaster.
Personally.
Did you know that? You can toast those things. I had no idea.
But if you put them in a toaster oven, they won't pop. Unless you overcook them,
that's true.
They will pop.
Tarts. I guess they wouldn't pop art. I never thought about that.
Explode tarts if you do that.
Explode tarts. I don't have a toaster. I have a toaster oven because I'm elite. And my man will go in there and get them. Not my partner, servant.
Do you spell that E-L-L-E-E hyphen T? Elite?
T.S. Eliot
Page.
That's our show. So we're here to talk Seahawks, at least for some of it. Here's some news. By the way, if Greg Van Roten, I've had this article shelled for a while now. He better sign, hopefully, in the next day. Today or tomorrow would be great. It'd be an article I can just post quickly. He's a guard, for those listening. He's an offensive guard. He also plays for the Cleveland Guardians baseball. So here's some... That's a lie. So here's some news. That reminds me, because we're just going to be jumping around. There was someone posted on our NFL channel on what we use for Fansided today for posting stuff. And it was a Twitter site. It was called our Twitter handle, and it was called NFL Draft Something. And it was a guy I'd never heard of. His last name was Forbes. It wasn't Forbes. It wasn't Steve, but it was some guy, Chad Forbes. That's who it was.
Interesting.
But he posted something, and it's clearly not a real like Adam Schefter kind of thing. I mean, he wants you to think he is, but clearly it's not, because, for instance, his post today was about three teams, and I have an article coming out about it tomorrow, whenever you're listening to this. It's never coming out. It's just always tomorrow. But I have an article coming out tomorrow about the three teams that might want to be interested in trading up for the Seahawks to get pick number 16. It's a great podcast. Mm-hmm. I swear we've talked before. And then the Seahawks could trade down and pick, another second round pick back up, hopefully. But in his tweet, he was like, there's three teams that are interested in trading up, and it's the Buccaneers, the Packers, and the Redskins. And I was just like, dude, if you're gonna pretend to be something, at least get the name of the team right.
Well, he's right. He's talking about 2016, so
exactly. Somebody made that comment under his handle too that he didn't respond to. Several people did,
I'm sure.
But the Seahawks did hire Joey Lane to be the cap specialist, and he replaces Matt Thomas. So there's your news. I mean, the cap thing, because it's not just like somebody looking at numbers being like, hey, Todd has $2 million to spend on this offensive guard, Lee Vowell, who will get run over continuously. Those people are actually part of the negotiations during the contract process as well. So somebody who, and the reason they are is because you have to make sure that your team's not going well over the cap. And as you pointed out rightfully, I think it was last week or the week before, that hey, if the Seahawks are dead last in cap room right now, don't panic, because
it's immaterial.
Right.
Now, if they're over the cap when that first whistle blows, they're in big trouble. So that's not
well, it can't be, right?
Yeah, it can't be. And you have to make sure those contracts are correct, as the 49ers found out, because they got bumped back one draft pick.
Yeah.
Penalized for messing up contracts. And as much as we like to rib the 49ers, it wasn't any sort of deliberate scandal. I mean, you can just tell from the language of it. It's like it basically is bookkeeping errors. So pretty important that they have the right people working. Yeah, it wasn't like a Patriots thing.
they deflated the contract.
I don't know how those cameras got there. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know why they made the change, because Matt Thomas had been, maybe he had to go to back to work for his dad, Dave, but he was the actually cap. That's a lie. Don't look that up. Cap specialist. He's a cap specialist for 11 years. So it's not like, oh, yeah, he's messed it up for 2 years. He was there for over a decade.
He's a specialist. Yeah. And they've done really well with working the cap. I mean, clearly, right? Because, I mean, they continually get people to renegotiate, and, you know, they've had people, oh, okay, we're going to cut you, but don't worry, we'll bring you back in a couple of days, and they do, right? So, I mean, that all goes
I'm surprised they haven't brought Nick Ballore back already, for instance.
Yeah.
Which they, in 2020.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
yeah.
Diggs or Adams. But,
yeah. And I know they're talking, they being Mike McDonald.
Those people.
Talking about, it's like, yeah, Adams is intriguing. I can see why he thinks Adams is intriguing. But the whole issue is like, yeah, I'm not going to be at the game. And whether or not it was his choice or Pete just said, it's like, hey, you know, just go ahead and go home. That's not a good look.
No, it's not.
And, you know, and it's like, and it's really frustrating, because basically up until that point, it's like, this guy was a great teammate, right? He was all about the Hawks.
Seemingly,
he talked about them, talking about, you know, at least right publicly, right? He was very supportive of the team. It's like, he obviously frustrated that he couldn't play because of the injuries. Obviously got more frustrated when NFL concussion protocol said, I was like, hey, you can't go back on the field, because he's been so desperate to get back out there. Like, you can't do what you did, though, dude. You can't say what you said. You can't do that. But it just kind of like, he was so frustrated and he gave up. And it's like, I don't care how you're feeling, you can't do that with your teammates. You just can't. So, you know, it would be awesome if he's healthy. And I don't care where he's playing. It's like, if he's healthy, if he goes back to the Jets, whatever. That would be fine.
That would be interesting.
That would be interesting. But yeah, that would be very surprised if Adams comes, because he's going to have to come back for the veteran minimum at this point. And I know we're talking about.
You would assume, I guess he wouldn't have to, but you would assume he would.
But that's all I'd give him.
Because that's all they should give him. Yeah.
He's pretty much, and he can have all sorts of incentives. It's like, okay, you know, you're not going to get any kind of guarantees. You're going to be playing for the veteran minimum. But it's like, you know, six starts, here's an extra $3 million. Or, you know,
yeah. Well, they're already paying him $20 million. So,
yeah.
Because of I mean, that was guaranteed money. Guaranteed money.
Yeah, but no extra. But yeah, I would much rather, if one of the two is going to come back, I'd much rather see Diggs.
I thought you were going to go Adams there for a minute. That's why I was like, presuming what your answer would be, because you're a huge LSU fan.
Yeah, totally. You know, the first, I am up here in the great frozen north, which, by the way, it's like 36 degrees. Ever since it became spring and decided, oh, we forgot to have winter, we'll have it now.
It's only 48 here.
Yeah.
It got cold. Yeah, it was in the 70s, and then it decided to rain, and then get cold, and then we're talking about the weather.
But anyway,
Toronto Arnett.
There are some sporting goods stores that have collegiate, as in American collegiate jerseys, and the first one I saw was LSU, and it's like, what the heck? Nothing wrong with LSU, but it's like, there are a few colleges between here in Louisiana. I'm picturing probably the window dresser just thought, you know, I like that color scheme and just went with LSU. No idea.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because it's not so like weird. They have a good women's basketball program, and their football team is, you know, pretty good most of the time.
Yeah.
And but it's not a school where it's like, oh, Stanford. It's like, you know, where they're, you know, maybe they're not good in football, but they're good in everything else, and it's a fantastic university. But it's just like LSU. It's like so random. I mean, I could see Texas or.
Yeah, it's random. Exactly. It's random. That's the thing. It was like, and
or if Stony
it was
Brook.
Michigan, any school from New York, although New York obviously didn't have a whole. But, you know, it could be some of the smaller schools in New York known for basketball would make sense. but just really odd thing. Anyway,
New Hampshire, Vermont. Mm-hmm. Let's see. LaVisca Chanel. Speaking of someone who has a French sounding name, like Louisianians. Signed as a kick returner too. They actually have almost too many receivers, so you wonder if he's actually going to make the team, or because D. Eskridge is besides Metcalf, Smith and Jigba and Lockett and Jake Bobo, they also still have, well, they signed Chenault and they still have Tariq Young, and then somebody else, Aesop Winston is still on the roster. I mean, they're not going to carry seven receivers. Obviously, they may carry. Nah. Four or five. Five would be a stretch. I guess it depends on how well Eskridge behaves, I guess, and how much he shows the coaches that he actually wants to play, and then how productive he is in the preseason. One question I have is when they get into preseason games, because you figure all these special teams coaches are going to try to think of, like Harbaugh for the Seahawks, you think they're going to come up with schemes where it's like, well, we have this new system and it was used in another league, but we're a great league and we're going to be able to think about all this excellent stuff we can do with it. So it makes you wonder if they're going to hide that a little bit in the preseason. Surely they would, right? Because otherwise,
they're going to play. I mean, typically they play vanilla schemes on everything, right? Anyway, right?
It's vanilla like sky. No, I don't know. It's a fine anything. Film, I guess. But...
yeah. Is it really? Not really.
No, it's not. It's not. I had to say something. I had to finish it.
Abre las ojos, much better film. Anyway, they're not going to show anything at all. And because why the heck would you? But it is going to be really interesting to see what happens, because that's a pretty big change. A very, very big change.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah. I just don't see the point in keeping Eskridge. You know, unless he absolutely blows everyone else out of the water in practice on returns.
Which he could.
He could, but and I'm not saying he didn't have a good year as a returner, but it's like, what, the one was 66 yards, right?
He had 166 and 140, I think, 40 something. Then he got hurt.
It's like, and exactly, you know, it's like, okay, so he manages to rip off a couple wonderful returns and then he's hurt. It was like, what was the point?
Well, and five games last year or something.
You've moved on from someone like Chenault because. You cut him because you're not going to keep nine receivers, like you said. Yeah, but now he's playing for somebody else. So,
I think the key is, too, that they can have, you know, a lot of teams are probably going to have two returners back because clearly if you can't, if the kickoff team can't start running until the ball bounces or somebody catches it, that makes sense to have the return team have two receivers because the kicker is going to try to place the ball into a spot. Sure. If you just have one and everybody's so close together. So they'll probably have two returners, but you still can't have just two guys on the team or returners only.
Exactly.
That's taking up too many roster spots.
Yeah, and one is going to be one of the wide receivers, and the other one will probably be one of the running backs.
Offensive linemen. Oh, yeah, what you said. Yeah.
Possibly. I don't know. It's not going to be a guard because...
That's right.
I have a lot of guards.
Maybe that's what Ankrum does. Offensive guard and kick returner. They just push him forward. Like, you know, it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You never know. They're going to come up with some unique schemes for sure.
The tush push. Is it odd? And I know just a couple days ago that Mr. Schneider said, it's like, oh, we're in the second phase of free agency. And it's like, kind of like in the ordinary phrase of free agency because but whichever, right? And they still have two guards. It's just seems really odd that at this point they still haven't added somebody. It's like
clearly they're gonna draft one at some point and you with everybody mocking the Washington guy Fautanu to Seattle makes sense, but and there's Graham Barton. That's all in one from Duke from, you know, he got drafted or mocked to Seattle. So I guess anything's possible. They have to address at least one or two players and one or two guards slash centers.
You know, the mocks have run a bunch of mocks. I've written about 87, I think, actually, four at this point. It's getting close to that.
the day before the draft, like the day before the first round of the draft, that Wednesday, we should just have 13 mock drafts by you. Be like, oh, okay.
There you go. But every mock draft, I've got two guards. I mean, sometimes it's a center like Powers Johnson, who they would most likely move to guard. Sometimes it's a tackle. But every single draft, I've got two guards. They got two right now. And one of them shouldn't be a starter.
Maybe both of them.
Maybe. And I was just going to say, thanks. Maybe both of them. So they have to address that. It is kind of odd that he's still just sitting there, meaning Schneider waiting is like, but then again, no one else is in a rush to sign these guys either. So it's not like people were panicking when the Seahawks didn't make any moves on day one. Oh my God, everyone's good. All the good players are being gone. It's like, okay, they can do one of two things. They can take one of those top names and then, for the rest of the free agency period, get guys like Jonathan Hankins, which, you know, not a problem with Hankins, but he's not like at the second tier either, right?
Yeah.
He's a rotational player. And if they had done that, that's all they would have had. They would have had one big splashy name and a bunch of guys who might get 20% of the snaps in a game. Is that really going to rebuild your team? No.
Two biggest splashes are their own guys who they could assign
exactly
3 weeks before the free agency period.
Which is kind of weird. But on the other hand, it's like they got pretty good deals on both of those guys.
Yeah, relatively speaking, yeah. They have.
I mean, Williams signed for a lot less than we expected.
Yeah, after that's Wilkins true. Signed. And what our guess was. I don't know. It's. It seems so weird in 2024 because it could be. I'm not a big fan of Rayshon Jenkins at safety. I think Love was good last year, and I think he'll be good. He's still only 25 years old.
Yeah.
But the linebackers have to show they can be good. It's not like, okay, we've got a known commodity in Dotson and Baker.
Right.
I mean, they have to join a new team, understand the communication, especially Dotson, since he's going to be the green dot, and then learn to play as a cohesive unit. There's so many
That sounds like a new article. But yeah, that's right. I mean,
first part of the season could be brutal. It could be.
Yeah.
We don't know the schedule yet, which will come out in May, I guess. But
yeah, I like Jenkins more than you like him. But absolutely, they're all unknowns, and there's a chance that every one of these guys could fall on their face.
Yeah,
all of them. You know, that potentially this could be a worse defense, even though you have a better there's no doubt that we have a better defensive coordinator this year than probably we have, maybe Seahawks history, let alone last year, right? Zero doubt of that. But you can only do so much. Now, McDonald has proven that he can take players who were unknowns and unproven and turn out an amazing cohesive unit. And of course, we've talked about that. I've written about it. I'm pretty sure you've written about it too. It's not about those individual players. It's about what you make of those individual players. That's why he went after the players he got. That's why Bobby Wagner, as much as everybody hates that Bobby Wagner has moved on, pretty sure everyone hates that Bobby Wagner has moved on to, Chad would say, the Redskins. but he doesn't fit the scheme. Absolutely doesn't fit the scheme. What's his one weakness? What's his kryptonite? Pass coverage. What's the one thing linebackers have to do above all in this new scheme? Well, not the one thing above all, but it's an important part of their duty. Coverage. It's like, what were the two things they're both the worst at? So they had to move on from both of those guys because it wouldn't work with the scheme. And the scheme is more important than the players. I mean, that's
although
just a fact
of
life.
You gotta think, and this is getting off the track a little bit, but even with the scheme, Wagner and Brooks both are, especially Wagner, should be veteran enough to be like, I've seen this play 30 times before. Maybe I'll do this one thing differently. It's just they were horrible. I mean, the scheme was horrible. Absolutely. Yeah. But as you point out, Wagner's skill set just was not, I mean, we love Bobby Wagner, future Hall of Famer. you know, they don't wear the hat like they do in baseball, but, you know, everybody will think of him as a Seahawk when he goes into the Hall of Fame, first ballot Hall of Famer. And then, but it's still like, and he was very good at what he does well last season, even though he was older, but he just couldn't cover. He could never cover. KJ Wright was fantastic in coverage. Wagner never has been good in coverage, and Brooks probably has never been taught how to be good in coverage.
That's true. Wagner had about 1 or 2 years where he was good in coverage. That's it. But yeah, KJ was always much better.
Which is hard to tell if it's the early 2010s. It's like the whole team covered. So it was like the individual players covered the field.
And that's part of it. And again, that goes back to the whole thing of like the team concept is like, okay, well, who's better in coverage? It's like the unit is better in coverage because where are you going to throw? There's no place to throw against that the Legion of Boom. There just wasn't. There aren't any seams. It's just they don't exist. You know, so when they're playing at their best. But again, we're not knocking Bobby Wagner because, like you said, it's like. In virtually every other aspect of his game, it's really hard to find a linebacker who's better at anything other than coverage. But so to me, it makes sense that they moved on from those guys and they got two players who are really good in coverage and could do other things well. But they're not exactly proven like Bobby Wagner was proven, or for that matter, like Brooks was proven either.
I think Brooks is gonna be great in Miami, because of the way the Dolphins defense is. Wagner will be good because he's good, but that defense is not gonna be.
No,
shouldn't be any better. Even with Quinn, it's basically the equivalent of McDonald coming to Seattle as Quinn going to Washington. But
But he's gonna be a standout, and he'll have 150 tackles.
And the rest of the team will have 47.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
I don't know. So we're 3 weeks as of the day that we're recording this, 3 weeks from the 2024 NFL draft. I should have said 2026. And people are like, what? NFL draft. The Seahawks currently have 7 picks. They have a first rounder, and they have a third rounder, and then 18 in the fourth round. But they have to. I think I posted this on our 12th Man Rising Facebook page, like either today or tomorrow, because I schedule those out too. But the question is, like, what's your the Seahawks have 7 picks right now. What is your prediction for what they actually end up with? And I'm hoping it's closer to 9 or 10. And even if that means moving back, I think it's not just the trading back in the first round for Schneider to pick up. Maybe they move back to 22 or 25 or whatever. But if they pick up a second rounder, which they need to. And then I think things can get a little crazy because they have, 5 of their picks, of their 7 picks, are fourth rounder later. He could make a lot of different moves. He can move all of them back to the 7th round. We're looking for the next Chris Carson kind of thing. But, I mean, I'm hoping that he, like, oh, okay, I've got 2 fourth rounders. I'll give you those if I can move back up later into the third. I think there's going to be a lot of movement. Which is going to make it fun for us, right? It's like, oh, Todd, you got the second article. Okay, they just drafted this guy, and then, okay, it's just going to be insane, probably.
Yeah, the third article. No, wait, you got to write 5 articles now.
Exactly.
Yeah, my one fear is that he does too much of it. I don't think he will. I'm not saying he will. My one fear, though, is that he does too much of it, because I'm looking at their draft picks in the past now. I'm looking at 2013, which was like basically straight garbage. And they had 4 picks in the 7th round. Like, why do you want 4 7th round picks?
Well,
basically, those are all going to be undrafted free agents. I mean, there's a good chance you could have gotten here are the Titans that they got in the 7th round: Ryan Seymour, Ty Powell, Jared Smith, Michael Bowie. You know, and that's typically what you're going to get in the 7th round. It's like, don't go too far back.
Right.
Now, what you're saying makes sense, right? To stockpile and then move up a little. And then you can
if it's moving into the third, you're not going to take 2 fourths and move into the second.
No.
I don't know what team would do that, but
no.
But yeah, I mean, you kind of want to. They're kind of in a bad place now. You don't want 5 of your picks to be on day 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is exactly what they have.
Right. You want to move up incrementally.
Yeah.
And then you can do something. So I mean, 5th round, they've been pretty they've done fairly well in the fifth round and fourth round overall. So,
I mean, what if you say, what if they change things completely and they move up this year and they talk to New England and they're like, hey, we know you have this pick.
Oh.
We'll give you, and I'm not saying I want this to happen for anybody listening.
Yeah.
But we'll give you DK Metcalf
and
our first round pick and then whatever, first round pick next year for your pick. And then they end up taking like whoever, Drake May or Jaden Daniels or somebody like that. Or I don't know, trade up and, well, we really like this defensive tackle.
I would be really ill for quite a while if they did that.
Yeah, because there's no need, right? Not only did you give up Metcalf and other picks, it's like you traded for a player you don't need. And an article I have coming out tomorrow talks about three position groups they don't need to take someone, and receiver and running back are two, should be obvious ones.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you mentioned last week about drafting a running back, but I don't even think they need that. I mean, they still have... They have a fourth. Kobach is a fourth back, and he's okay.
I mean, I would draft a running back and a receiver, but not to like.
I just don't think they have any room.
Maybe the fifth.
Yeah, but they already have a glut of receivers. I don't even know what you do with them, because then you're just wasting a potential pick. Because I think they're set at the top four, especially with Bobo. Yeah. Right?
But well, I'm figuring Metcalf, not Metcalf, good God. I'm figuring Metcalf is gone. I'm picturing Eskridge is gone. Whether they manage to get a seventh round pick for him or a coupon, whatever they get for him, or they just cut him.
They just release him.
Yeah, they're just gonna release him because there's no point in keeping him, and they can save $1 million on the cap. And it's like, the cap doesn't matter now, but it's gonna matter. It's like, why keep a guy that you basically have already replaced? Now, and, you know, this is before they even got the new guy, but I was still depending on who's out there, right? I mean, I wouldn't waste, because again.
You mean if everybody, like, hey, it's a sixth round, nobody's chosen this Marvin Harrison Jr. guy for some reason.
Not quite at that level, but yeah, I mean, if there's a guy that they really like and he's still out there in the fifth round and they've already got their guards, they already have an edge, they already have an interior defensive lineman. They already have a linebacker because they have a lot of needs because they have so many 1-year contracts. And some people I think they're not really picturing, oh, we got our linebackers. It's like, this year you do.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you wrote about it, but you probably have written about it because you've written about everything basically. But if both of those guys blow up, their linebackers, that those are going to be big contracts next year.
Yeah, especially Dodson.
Exactly. Because
he's finally getting his chance. I mean, he finally got a chance to start last year, and after everybody was hurt, and he did really well. And if he proves he can do well on a different team, then his contract's going to go way up. Baker, his contract could go up too, but I think he's basically at the top end. Nothing wrong with that. I think he's a solid tackler and good in coverage.
This just depends what he does, right? Depends how the season plays out. But they have a lot of one-year. They have a lot of one-year contracts, and I don't remember off the top of my head what their cap is next year. Although I can find out really quickly.
Extremely low. It is low. So one of the lower ones, which I was kind of surprised by because I thought, they've cleared off the space. They've made changes.
Yeah, hopefully 17. They've got a lot
That's
all. They have 17.
Which is 25th in the league or something like that.
Yeah.
There's. Not much to spend next year either.
They can nearly double that because odds are they're going to move on from Geno.
Yeah, which is $25 million.
Yeah, so that's going to make a big difference. But regardless.
I think they should sign everybody to a one-year deal. Like, you prove it, okay? We may have to start all over next year, but if it doesn't work out this year, then...
It'll be the Dodgers.
That's right.
The 1957 Dodgers of the NFL. I wonder if they'll call them the Redskins.
Who knows? Chad Forbes would.
So. Chad Forbes would. We're vicious today. I'm not quite what's going on with us. Sorry, Chad. We love your work. I haven't read anything you've done, but
I don't think he does anything. I think he just tweets it. I tried to actually look up who he was, and it was like
that's funny.
It looks like he's been on podcasts.
Well, it's probably a bot. It's probably just
probably. Yeah.
Sorry if you're not a bot, but,
The same person that posted it, no offense to this person, NFL channel, but they've posted other stuff on from Twitter before where it's like, I don't think that's a reputable thing. But I still use the tweet to, as an article, and clearly wrote in the article that this is probably not. I said, but the idea that he brings up is conceivable. So that's kind of where I went with that. Yeah. Those three teams. The three teams were the Commanders, because they don't have the, that's the iffy one. If Seattle traded back, they wouldn't trade number three pick or whatever, number two pick, whatever the Commanders have. But if they trade back, the Commanders don't have another first round pick, but they have two pretty high second round picks.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, maybe. It depends, because what the Seahawks need, right? They don't need, they could get to players they need with two high second round picks in a way.
Yeah.
And then the Packers, they would just trade back in the first round and pick up another second rounder. And then with the Buccaneers, it would work the same way. So it all made sense theoretically. His information is probably bogus, but at least those three teams made sense.
And
Schneider, the only time he's ever chosen anybody who, Charles Cross, that makes sense. And it felt almost like a surprise. Like, wait, he actually didn't draft back and took a player that we actually needed? It's like, whoa. Yeah. Which is kind of why you almost don't think he'll do it. If they stick this year at number 16, it'll be somebody that they don't need. It'll just be like, oh, okay, Michael Penix Jr. All right, great. Mm. I mean, I like Penix Jr. as a person and a player, but it's like,
nah, they can't. They can't. No, they won't do that. But, you know, well, they don't need a quarterback in the first round. Absolutely. I don't care who the hell it is. And that's something I don't see them moving up, because like you just said, it's like they can get the players they need most likely even down in the second round, let alone sitting at 16. I can definitely see them moving back to like 24, 25 in that range, still getting the guy they want. It just doesn't make sense to move up. 16 is a weird place, right? Because you can't get the very best guys. By definition, you're not in the top 10. But sometimes players fall down. It's like, again, Metcalf slipped down in the second round. And like, oh, he couldn't run routes. It's like, he's not the best route runner, but he is capable of making cuts. And the way they were describing him pre-draft is like, he's got straight line speed, but that's all he has. It's like, you know, it's like, he can do a little more than that, as we saw and as we continue to see, right? And that's funny, because here we are, we're writing about the draft. And sometimes, I mean, I am no draft nick. I look at, when I say I look at film, and by the way, I never say I look at film. If I look at film, it means I looked at like a 30-second clip. That's it. That's how much film study I do, because I tend to be a draft expert. And a lot of times, just you look at the stats and you look at, like I said, a 30-second clip and just get a quick picture. And it's like, a lot of times those uninformed opinions are just as spot on as the guys who've studied 3 hours of film on a guy.
Oh, 100%, because it's all a guess. You don't know what the team's going to do. Heck, even the team doesn't know, as we've spoken about before.
Look at the history of the NFL draft. Look how many busts there are in the top 10. There are as many busts in the top 10 as there are successes. And then you have guys like Chris Carson, obviously a huge anomaly, but
Brock Purdy,
you know, Mr. Irrelevant. It's like, and he was in the running for MVP until he had one bad game. Like, it's a well-informed crapshoot, but it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, it's a crap. It does seem like a lot of quarterbacks are going to go first. We can assume Caleb Williams will go first, but after that, it's like, okay, quarterbacks, but you don't really know. I mean, I don't know. And teams aren't going to let you know. Why would they, right?
No, of course.
It's like, oh, I'm going to tell Kuiper that we're taking. Why would you do that?
Yeah, McCarthy, J.J. McCarthy. There's buzz on him going in the top 10, being the second quarterback pick.
I've heard top three.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Which is a good point. I've heard that, but there's no, who cares?
And then there's a lot that still keeps him in the second round.
Which there's no way it falls in
there. Yeah, if you get him in the second round, I would almost.
If he hasn't been chosen and the Seahawks stick at 16, he's going to the Seahawks at 16. I can almost guarantee that.
I was going to say, if the Seahawks move back in the draft, and like you were saying, if they move back and get a late first round and a second round, if he's in the second round, I'll take him.
I don't think they'd move back, though, until it was their time to choose. And if J.J. McCarthy's on the board at 16, I think they take J.J. McCarthy.
You think so?
Yeah, just stuff. I've just heard too many people who seem to know. Yeah, just too many people. Like Brock Heward, for instance.
Oh, wait. I don't care what Brock Heward says. Did Chad say this?
No, Chad, Chad was smart. He actually said they would take Kent Colby. Which makes sense. His thought process is that
submarine style, very reminiscent of Pat Mahomes. So
his thought process is that Geno would go through the first three quarters, and then you bring in the closer in the fourth quarter, and that's when you win the game. It just makes sense.
And but the problem is with that is like Geno is the closer, as we saw.
Well, he's no Tecovia, you know, I'm saying, and the second choice was Robert Turbin.
That would be. Actually, I was thinking about Robert Turpin just the other day. Honestly, it was like, yeah, I know, right? It's like, I'm just looking over. Look at these draft picks. Anyway, I was looking at people who like they have early promise, and then
Rob Gordons.
Oh my God! Yes,
6 minutes for our Rob Gordons, which this week, first time we've done this in weeks. This week today.
That's an HBO show if I've ever heard of one. This week today.
It's like John Oliver's Last Week Tonight kind of thing. It's like, this week today. But anyway, our Rob Gordons this week today. Todd R.
5 sports jobs not related to the Seahawks and not actually playing the sport. In other words, 5 jobs that would be really boring because they don't have anything to do with their favorite teams or actually playing the sport. Or, never mind, go ahead.
Well, my first one was Otani's agent, right? I mean, that's who you want. No, I'm just kidding.
For contracts or for extracurricular activities? Anyway.
Well, the thing that surprises me about the Otani thing, the agent thing, is that they obviously speak Japanese, right? And they talk to reporters all the time. They're around teammates all the time. And some of those teammates have probably played in Japan. And the issue is that, nobody could really understand because they're spoken Japanese to each other. There's somebody that knows what they're saying to each other. That's BS to say, nobody knows what they're saying.
I'm pretty sure there were both someone in the Angels organization and in the Dodgers organization that speaks Japanese.
And you're in Los Angeles.
Fluently. Right? Exactly. There are random reporters who know.
Yeah.
Well, not it's random like, reporters.
If he played probably, with the Mariners.
There's probably a dozen reporters there from Japan.
Yeah. And if you played with the Mariners, it would be the same thing. If you live on the West Coast, there's a large, heck, even Toronto. If you're a metropolitan city, there are people who speak every language that you can think of there.
Yeah.
And if you sign a player for, it ended up being, it was $700 million, but it was really slightly less than that. Still hundreds of millions of dollars. The first thing I'm doing is there's somebody that lives around here who can speak Japanese. And I'm going to hire them for whatever it costs to just be there to just save the team. Just in case some shit like that happens.
Yeah.
Like, do you have a Japanese market? Are you doing anything this summer? You know, I might, that kind of thing. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll start with the Seattle thing since you came up with it. My number 5 for me, and these are in really no order whatsoever, is the manager of the Seattle Mariners.
Can't be
a player, but I'll be a manager because that job's easy. You can lose all you want to and keep your job.
Is Danny Kaye the owner again? Is that what's going on?
That's right. That's Bing Crosby's son or something. I don't know.
might be. My number 5 is a tennis coach, but not youth because children are horrible. But a youth tennis coach who I think would be a lot of fun. Wouldn't pay anything. As a matter of fact, it would probably pay nothing. But that would just be, to me, that would be very fun. Now I would have to get much better at tennis to actually do that. But I know enough I know which part of the racket you hold. You hold the skinny part, not the big, white, flat part. Start with that.
See, I just learned something.
There you go.
I think the thing about coaching, though, is you don't have to know. I mean, you have to know. It's not just the X's and O's, right? It's the right. mental side of it as well. So
one of the most well-known tennis coaches ever, Vic Braden, right? He was a really good doubles player back in, what, the 50s, maybe? But he was never, like,
played with Kobe, I think.
Yeah, he played, yeah, Kobe?
To Kobe. And Bruce Sutter was there, too, I think.
Sutter would be. But just an absolutely brilliant tennis coach. And like you said, like much more focusing on the mental aspect of the game. But, you know, this is a Western grip and all that other good stuff. But it's like, that would be fantastic. Your number four.
My number four. Actually, I have tennis coach on there, but I have a specific one. Coach of either Jannik Sinner or Carlos Alcaraz. Because, you know, you're going to, as long as you're not an idiot, you're going to keep your job at a high level for the next decade plus, hopefully. Yep. I mean, tennis coaches change quite a bit, but neither of those guys seem too apt on changing coaches very often. A lot of the top end guys, I mean, Nadal certainly doesn't, but it's just coaches of those specific players, because you're going to be able to go from tournament to tournament, playing at a high level deep into the tournament, and also see a lot of beautiful countries while you're getting to see a lot of beautiful tennis at the same time. Well, I will say this. Jannik Sinner, I don't know if we've talked. Did we talk about the Miami Open?
No, we didn't. At all?
Don't we texting? He won the Miami Open this past weekend. He beat Medvedev in the semis, and he beat Dimitrov in the finals. Both players, obviously, very good. Medvedev is you know, top five forever. He lost. Sinner lost seven games total, and in those two matches, and
that's insane.
I have never, ever, ever, ever seen a player play better than I saw young Jannik Sinner play in those two matches, ever, on any surface, any court. He was
just, go back and watch those.
Yeah, he was Medvedev, who stands 18 feet back on, I'm not making that up, he stands 18 feet back when he returns.
Yeah.
He came into the match standing 3 feet back. He was trying to do literally anything. It was like Marvis Frazier against Mike Tyson.
That's
I'm just
going
to try to survive. I'm not going to try to win this. I'm going to try to survive. And he won three games that match, and that's the fewest he's ever won on the ATP tour. It was the shots Sinner was making. It wasn't like he was overpowering with his serve. Like, okay, he's just going to serve somebody off the court. He has a good serve. But the shots he was able to make are just like, there were times when I literally was watching on TV and I was just like, no, he did not. No, you can't do that. Like Carlos Alcaraz, Novak Djokovic, Federer, all the greats have made fantastic. The shots he made over those 2 days were just like, Dimitrov in the last point, he was just like, hit it back because I can't hit it. I'm just walking toward the net. That's exactly what happened. He's like, Sinner hit a backhand. He was just started walking to the net. Like, I'm not even going to try. It's insane.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. My next one, because I'm looking to say number four, because again, same as you, no particular order, is an MMA announcer, mixed martial arts announcer. Not for UFC, because they're pretty much locked down and they're really good at their job. I would go for something smaller, like the Professional Fighters League, et cetera, something along those lines. I think IFL, I'm not even sure anymore. They've had so many mergers and crap. Bellator isn't around, but the second tier would be really fun. Just because I think it's a fascinating sport, and a lot of the fans just want to see the knockouts, and there's so much more to it. And it's like, you know, they'll boo when people are like working for position, and it's like you're not even watching what's going on, or you're incapable of watching what's going on because you don't know what's going on. And same thing, it's like I don't have like a level of expertise I would have to like study for a lot of the time to do this, but I just enjoy it, and I think it'd be really fun to do. Plus free admission.
Oh yeah, that's a big bonus.
Yeah, there you go.
I've often thought about, like, you'd be the ring announcer, or you'd be an announcer from like calling
commentary
happening.
Yeah, commentary. Okay. That would be commentary.
Yeah, that would
not
be fun.
not the play-by-play guy, the one of the color guys. And typically, like, for UFC, they have three guys that do the commentary. And usually it's a play-by-play guy who could do play-by-play for any sport. Then they have, well, Joe Rogan, who's never fought. I think he fought professionally briefly, but I mean, he has a lot of fight experience, and Joe Rogan is a podcaster or whatever. And aside from his views, he's very good at his job and that, because he knows what he's talking about in this case, unlike a lot of his topics. And then they'll have a former fighter who also knows what they're talking about. And more importantly, they're able to convey that knowledge, because that's not necessarily, those two skills don't necessarily overlap. So it would just be really fun to be part of a team like that.
Have you seen Roadhouse yet?
I've not seen Roadhouse yet.
Don't. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I've heard it's pretty over the top.
There's just some parts where it's just like, no. And the later you get in the film, it's that way. Then it gets to be.
We are going to go see Monkey Man this weekend. I'm looking forward to that.
I want to see that so badly.
Dev Patel.
It's gotten really good reviews, too.
Yeah, who? Dev Patel is just.
That guy's a nobody. Can't act.
Right? I mean, the guy is freaking brilliant. Plays David Copperfield. Plays Sir, I can't remember now if it's Sir Galahad or Sir Gawain. But I was like, and. As my wife said, he's a chocolate boy, and she's not referring to the color of his skin. She's referring to he's just such a scrumptious little face. You know, it's like, and yet he can play these characters of such depth and intensity. Like, guy's amazing. Guy's absolutely amazing. So
the
really
John Wick ripoff is what it is. Kind of in a way, almost sort of.
Anyway,
not
yes.
really a ripoff, but I mean, it's same kind of like, yeah. But
well,
yeah,
it would be a John Wick ripoff if he makes it 20 years from now, because then he would be, you know, older. So,
yeah. How old is Dev Patel now? Anyway, it seems like he's been around for like decades.
Forever. I'm going to guess maybe 38. Let's see.
When would Slumdog Millionaire come out? It's early 2000s, right?
He's 33. He's only 33.
That's insane.
He's only 30. That's why I said 38, because it's like, he's been around so long. He's 33 years old.
It's like Coco Gauff. It's like, oh, she's been playing for 20 years. It's like, oh, she's only 20 years old.
How is this guy 33 years old?
That seems, is that correct? Or is that Chad Forbes getting you that, giving you that information?
Seriously, how is he 33 years old, dude?
How old was he in Slumdog Millionaire? I know he was young anyway, but he must have been
19, I guess.
It seems insane. I mean,
good God, dude.
I don't even know what we are. Three. We always take so long on this.
We're three.
And I've done Mariners. I've done Center. Chairman or chairperson of the English Premier League. Because they're run by a board. They're actually run by a board instead of one person, you know, which is smart. But of course, you can't make all the decisions and everything, but just being part of the board and being able to go to all the different locations and just it would be a fantastic experience, in my opinion, anyway.
I have the commissioner of an independent baseball league, any independent baseball
cool
league.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Just and just like change the game up a little bit, not too much, because baseball is tradition, basically, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could change how they do the kickoffs.
I could. That would be fascinating. And then, I mean, honestly, it's one reason I would rather do, because there are independent, or there's a long history of independent leagues in baseball, not as much as football. There are, but usually they shoot too big and they fail. So I would rather have something lower level. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be cool. Nelson Cruz had a cool thing that happened to him he was involved in with the Mariners the opening day. Mm-hmm. He was set to throw out the first pitch, which everybody knew. He's throwing out the first pitch. But he goes out there to throw out the first pitch, and they wheel out this, not a pulpit, but this kind of thing. They wheel it out. He signs a one-day. Yeah, sign a podium, and he signs a one-day contract to retire as a Mariner, and then he throws out the first pitch.
Ah, that's so cool.
That is awesome, yeah. Let's see. So, I'll do the second one. The tournament director for the Australian Open, because you only have to work once a year. No, I'm just kidding. No, but you get to obviously live. I mean, unless you're James Blake in Miami, maybe he lives in Miami. But does the Miami Open. But Australian Open, one of the four Grand Slams, and then you just be the director. You get to live in Melbourne or, you know, southeastern Australia, which would be really cool. And then, you know, that'd be a really fun gig. I thought about Wimbledon, which is different because then you get all whole into the whole lawn and country club thing. And the U.S. Open would be, but it's nothing against New York. I like New York, but it's like I don't want to always live in New York, you know, because of the winters. And then the French Open is just like they're rude, right? You just have to be rude. But I thought, oh, the Australian Open, that would be awesome.
Did you diss winter knowing where I live now? My next one
you
is...
You probably have more temperate winters than New York does in some aspect.
We do, actually. Yeah, we do. I mean, which is weird. It's actually not that far north. Anyway, my next one is in my penultimate... ultimate sports job, which neither one of us is talking about sports writing because you are
actually wrote that and cross it out and that's well you writer. Are too, you get paid to do it, but it's
exactly.
Like
you're a full-time sports writer, I'm a part-time sports writer. I don't pretend to be good, but I am getting paid. Definitely. So you know that's
the reason
really
I didn't do that is because you're observing the sport instead of in the sport. So that's why I marked it out.
Totally makes sense. My next is a statistician, a completely different field from math, a statistician, either for football or baseball. I just find the statistics side of it to be fascinating. And I would have to get a lot better at math to do stuff, but like every once in a while, at least every other month, I'll post.
Just use ChatGPT.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there you go. I'll post a mathy article and just a brief explanation. I'm doing an article talking about one particular player, and it depends on individual game statistics. And I thought, okay, instead of me slogging through every single play-by-play for this player, I'll just put the query into ChatGPT. And ChatGPT spits out, well, here's what it would look like. Fill in the blanks. It's like, no, I want you to fill in the blanks. And it says, well, I can't do current data. It's like, this isn't current. This is past data. Here are
real
the dates.
Real time, I think.
Yeah, it said real time. It said real time. It's like, okay, I don't want real time. I want historical data on a publicly available site, which ChatGPT listed that particular site, as a matter of fact. And it still said, well, basically, no, sorry, I can't do that. I don't have access to it.
It's I think like, it even called Russell Wilson for you, didn't it?
Like when you were practically.
Hey, Russ.
Then I went to another site and it got me information. It got me one game. It got me the data for one game. So it can find it. It can only find one though. And it's like, and as I said to Lee in pre-pro, hi Ted, like the amount of time I wasted putting these queries into ChatGPT and refining them to get absolutely nothing, literally. I kind of timed it. Literally, I got the information for one season, plowing through the play-by-play of every single freaking play for all the games I was looking for, and the same amount of time it took to ask ChatGPT not to do it. I'm not too worried about AI taking over the world. I just am not. Anyway, so, yeah, I've always been fascinated by the statistical side of it. But I tell you what, this Kilkenny Irish Cream Ale hits just right. 4.3 alcohol, but it's just enough. You know what I mean?
Statistical.
I should run for president. I can't speak.
That's actually how I sound all the time. You just have an excuse. But I literally sound like that always.
But I literally, before we had access to, and
beer.
This goes back a little way, there's never a time I didn't have access to beer because I have cousins in Wisconsin. Before I had access to like personal computers, I would literally fill out notebooks with like box scores and career lines and posting. It's like, okay, this is what they've done so far. This is what I project they're going to do in the future. It's like, which I know is like super weird nerd stuff, right? But I think it would be really fun to do that. Anyway.
Yeah, it would be. I used to do the same thing with notebooks. I used to fill notebooks, like spiral-bound notebooks. Baseball stuff. It was only baseball stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Mine was maybe 30% football. Most of it was baseball. Yeah. Wow. it's a good thing we're both in relationships because we would never, ever get a That's date right. again in our lives.
Well, even if I'm in a relationship, there's no guarantee of a date. So my number one, this is number one, since I wouldn't, can't be a player. Actually, I would, the only thing I would change this out for would be a professional, like a top 10 for years and years, top 10 professional tennis player. But number one for me is the men's basketball coach of the University of North Carolina, Tar Heels.
Well, of course, I should have seen that coming.
By the way, Kelly Harper got fired. Did you see that?
Are you serious?
Yeah. They literally
really?
Yeah, seriously.
Wow.
Made a leadership, what do they call it? A leadership direction change. I didn't even call it a, they didn't even say, oh, she's fired. It's like, nope, she's just no longer the coach of the basketball team.
All right, then. It almost sounds like it's like the Pete Carroll announcement.
Somebody like, hey, okay, you realize that there is no Pat Summitt. Pat Summitt's not coming back, right? So.
Wow.
Yeah, even her Wikipedia page now says, Kelly Jolly Harper is an American basketball coach who most recently served as the.
Wow, somebody jumped on that right away.
Yeah, probably Kelly Harper. Probably. Screw these people. It's my wiki page. Go UConn.
Wow, that's. Oh, Jesus. Now that would watch her go be an assistant at UConn. It's like, oh, thanks, KJ.
We haven't even talked about that. South Carolina.
Different. Oh, really?
Well, just because South Carolina. I mean, South Carolina is the new UConn. You know?
Yeah, basically.
I like how they. I love how they're playing. Caitlin Clark is really great for basketball in general. Right, fantastic player. Same thing with the Reese who plays for LSU. Love how women's sports is coming up and be like, hey, they can actually play. Yeah, they can beat your ass, kind of thing, right? Oh, but it's like all this, and it's like, oh, and then there's South Carolina. it's kind of like, well, you know, everybody's playing. It's almost like Patrick Mahomes. It's like, okay, well, we could have these great quarterbacks. We got it. And then there's Patrick Mahomes. You know, it's like, okay, we're playing for number two.
Yeah. And we've talked about this for a long time, but it's like, even though there's only five on the floor at the same time and one person can have an outsized influence on the game, it's still five. It's not five on one. So anyway, my number
unless
one,
you're young LeBron James with the Cavaliers. Oh,
did you say Bronny? Anyway,
it does okay, but no. Nah.
My number one is the general manager of a barnstorming baseball team. Again, so the independent, the fact that you could do a lot of stuff. The model is the Savannah Bananas, which I severely, severely regret not going to see them a couple of years ago. They came to West Palm Beach, and it's like, I can't remember what was going on, but I didn't go. And it's like, because I figured, oh, they'll be back. And it's like, they hadn't come back, and then I moved. They possibly could come up to the Great Frozen North at some point. But there's a documentary about them on ESPN, which is fascinating and hilarious. But it would be so fun. And it's not like almost like a comedic thing like they are, but it would be just, again, the fact that you could do a lot of stuff with promos, you could fool around with it. You just have to watch part of one of their games. It's incredibly fun what they do. And yet they're still really good players, really good baseball players. Are they major league level? Of course not. They're not. If they were, they'd be in the major leagues, right?
Yeah.
But AA, easy. AAA, easy. We've both been to a ton of games at that level. And it's like when the competition is at the same level, it doesn't matter. It's still really, really fun. It's really entertaining. But just to be able to be a GM of something like that, and not so much just like doing the promos, but collecting the talent, that would be so, so fascinating to me. It's like Bill Lee actually pitched for them recently. Roger Clemens pitched for them, I think, within the past.
Yeah, that's right.
Just a little while ago. So, I mean, they'll reach out and get players like this. And obviously that's a big draw when they get somebody like that. And they're able to just, well, Bill Lee always had fun on the mound. But, you know, they're able to just kind of cut up and relax. And I'm sure even for someone with Clemens, who I don't particularly care for as a person because of certain, you know, game-related issues, is able, it's got to be a blast for them to get out there and play again, especially in an environment like that.
Yeah, like for sure.
It's just such an enjoyable thing.
The seasons they had Billy and Vida Blue, just amazing, honestly. They were just... An oil can Boyd.
Oil can Boyd. Oh my God.
Anyway, yeah. That's our show. We don't really have a great ending, but if we can word stuff for the next 10 seconds, then we would make
Here's the thing. I would get all nickname team. I would get players like Oil Can.
At 60 minutes now.
Why are you the worst?
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.